Thank you very much. And thank you for coming. Good news is that I'm going to be over soon, and then you can enjoy the rest of your day or go to another sessions. But again, thank you for attending my talk. I hope that you had a chance to attend the talk of Dr. Scheffler just before mine. And on that talk, she exposed that the expression of Gossypol on cotton plants is really manipulated by these two genes. If you manipulate them, you can achieve no plants on the plant and no Gossypol. This might be good news for the persons that are trying to commercialize the cotton seed, because it's very has a lot of protein and can be used for animal feed. But when you manipulate this natural protectant of the plant, you may be encountering higher pest attack, especially for some of those insects that they love cotton. I'm going to present here two of the objectives that Dr. Scheffler still had on mind on her project. And one was, after she has manipulated successfully these plants for no Gossypol expression, now she wants to know what happens with the heliotine feeding. And this is going to be broken down into kind of a two different components. The first one, well, there's no pointer here, but the first one is three lines that have been manipulated for no Gossypol expression. The original lines are on the red bars, and the manipulation or the line, the isogenic line that is not producing Gossypol at all, is the yellow line. The objective two was kind of a variation on the density of Gossypol glands. As she was mentioning, the first variety on your left has pretty much 90% of the original plants or the normal Gossypol glands. The middle one, about 75%, so a little bit of a reduction. And the clear or more clear bar on the right is pretty much 50% of the glands observed on cotton lines. And these were compared with two varieties that she also mentioned. The first one of the green bars is Delta Pine 432, and the other one is a commercial line that produces high amount of Gossypol. We took three approaches to see if these plants are more eaten by heliotines. The first one, we took a top terminal leaf about this size, and we put it in a plastic cup. Then we put on top of that a neonate bollworm or tobacco bollworm. We clear the cup and we maintain the insects for 7 days. But on the same terminal that we took that leaf out and brought it to the laboratory, then we put a larvae and we enclose the larvae with these bags that you see on the right. 7 days later, we clipped the bags and we took them to the lab and we took all kinds of measurements on plant defoliation and larval weight, etc. And while we were doing this, we were observing the natural incidence of tobacco bollworm and bollworm in the field. We made three evaluations of natural populations, and we took the worms, we took all the worms into the lab, we put them on regular diet, and when they emerged as adults, we found out that on average, a fourth of them were tobacco bollworm and three-fourths of them were bollworms. Now, before I present you the results, tobacco bollworms and bollworm response to pretty much all the parameters that we study behave very similarly. And also, since I have only like 9 minutes left, I cannot go and break down into every single species. I cannot really devote a lot of time comparing results that happen in the field or in the lab, but I can tell you that they were very similar. So I'm taking a kind of a summary punchline slide. And for the first one, I'm comparing here the three varieties, the three isogenic lines that produce normally gossypol glands and none. Again, gossypol glands present on the plant are the red bars, and the plants without gossypol glands are in the yellow. And these were compared again with the green bars that are the commercial varieties. On this first slide, larval mortality was not significantly different between the isogenic lines, and they were not different from the commercial varieties. On larval growth, that was a different story, because larvae grew significantly bigger, heavier, on the varieties that were modified for non-expression of gossypol glands. So no gossypol in the plant, the larvae were able to grow a little bigger. But this only was observed on bollworms. And if you take those three lines, those three modifying lines out of the, let's say, of the equation, and we keep these original isolines, they produce the same larval growth than the commercial varieties. Then the amount of foliage eaten by the two species of insects were not significantly different from the glanded and glandless lines. And they were not different from the commercial varieties. Then under natural occurring population of heliotines, you can see that only one of the isogenic lines that was modified, the one on the left, the A6 without glands, had more tobacco bollworm and bollworm in the field than the rest of the other lines. And kind of the bottom line on this, yield, cottonseed per plant, they were not significantly different among isolines. And only the first line, AC, glanded or glandless, was significantly lower on yield than the commercial line DP432, but not from the other commercial line. So these are good news, kind of from just the incidence of larvae all the way to yield. You can see that her Dr. Scheffler's modifications have created at least two varieties that are producing very, very well, and they are very tough against heliotines. Now, the other three lines that present 90% of the normal glands, 75% and 50% are going to be compared now with the two commercial varieties, I mean among them and commercial varieties. In the same sequence, larval mortality, no differences between those three lines or the commercial varieties. And larval growth, it was pretty much the same story. No differences between the lines. Actually, the percentage of the incidence of glands in the plant was not affecting the larval growth, but actually these varieties kind of make the worms grow a little heavier than the commercial varieties, especially the one all the way to the right, because it's the one that expresses more gossypol than any of them. The defoliation, again, no differences between those lines, but they were, the plants, the terminals were eaten a little bit more if you compare it with the commercial varieties. Heliotines per meter under natural population, again, 1/4 of them were tobacco bollworm, 3/4 of them were bollworms. Only the line on the clear, the light blue bar was the only one that had more heliotines in the field than the rest of the lines. And this kind of makes sense because the dark bar is the one with 90% of the glands. And if you can see the arrow there, the density of the glands goes down, and probably, well, you can see here that the attack goes up. But yield, now we're going back to this, to the same story that before, no differences between lines. And actually, these experimental lines yield significantly higher than the other commercial line, the H1220, not from the other one, but at least there are no significant differences between these isolines and the commercial Delta Pine 432. So, kind of wrapping up this again, as some of our colleagues recently published, Dr. Stepanovich and his group said that all the cottonseed production of the world has the capacity to feed almost 8% of the world population. But one of the obstacles right now is the presence of gossypol. And thanks to Dr. Scheffler and Romano, we can start or continue experimenting on these lines that can give really good protection against heliotines, and they can produce cottonseed that can be used by animals. And I thank for your attention, and I'll take questions that you have. Yes, Ako. Correct, correct. You're absolutely right. I think your question was like, what happened with other pests that we have not experimented with? Absolutely right. There are defoliators, and Dr. Scheffler is even thinking on what about sucking insects? Is this going to attract more of them? We still don't know. This is pretty much our first field trial, but definitely we're going to look into everything that has happened. I can tell you briefly that we had a decent attack of soybean looper at the end, and we didn't see any differences with the commercial varieties. And this experiment this year didn't have any insecticides at all from the very beginning all the way to the end, so plants just grew naturally. Yes, Anil. And the other question? Okay. Well, I think that Dr. Scheffler can answer that way better than I can.
Actually, the second question was to that, actually. So if you play around with plus and minus forms of the gossypol, probably one of them is more safer to ruminants. So I think that's a better approach than not having a
Yes, sir.
It seems that the allergy and so on overall are
Well, one of the things can be that we are working with different varieties that they were not as tough as, but they are tougher than they were before. That can be one of the explanations. Mm-hmm. And again, this is the first year. We cannot call this a very intense heliotype pressure, but we have done this by several methods, and they all pretty much correlate the same. Doctor? Dr. López. Sure. This colony that I'm testing here, we are on probably generation 9 that we have exposed every generation to very high. Its diet made 90% of cotton, lyophilized cotton. So these insects are very tough. They can eat very well lyophilized cotton. So they are very familiar with all the cotton components. Yes, sir. No, we haven't. Again, Saku, I'm sorry. Perhaps, but taking other colony that is not selected for that is not growing and is not doing as well as this one. I mean, this colony that we're using, the one that you're looking here at the slide, can reproduce happily from neonate to adult on 100% cotton diet or fresh cotton. Thank you very much.